This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Welcome to A Certain Age, a show for women who are unafraid to age out loud. Beauties, buckle up. We have a show packed with so much juicy, juicy goodness, I hardly know where to start squeezing. My friend Casey Erin Clark is with us today. How to introduce her? Should I start with her job, or should I say jobs? She's a singer, actor, recording artist, singing coach. She's toured with Les Mis, she's done TV, film. She sings in Broadway Inspirational Voices, a choir of Broadway artists, raising money for charity. Casey is also a co-founder of Vital Voice Training, which offers public speaking and communication coachings. You don't need to be a singer. You don't need to be an actor. She helps the rest of us express ourselves with confidence, clarity, charisma. Because guess what? Expressing yourself with confidence, clarity, charisma is not just for Broadway, not just for the stage. It's for life. It's for work, for board meetings, PTA meetings. It's for Zoom calls. It's for podcasting, book tours, client pitches, wedding toasts, birthday roasts. It is for life. Casey believes your voice, your body, and your ideas deserve to take up space in the world. And if you believe this too, stick around as she shares tools and ideas to help you express and connect. Welcome, Casey.
That was overwhelming and lovely, and I'm going to have to hire you to do my intro every time I go speak somewhere.
Oh my God, I am truly thrilled. Casey and I have known each other for a bunch of years. She's a total blast. She's incredible. I've gotten to see her sing with Broadway Inspirational Voices in the city. I am so excited. This is going to be so much fun. We're definitely going to dive into all your public speaking coaching, because I know you help, you know, people take big stages and deliver TED-style talks and prep for press events. Yes, we're going to get there. But first, I want to do some stage setting. And you know, I could not resist that pun. This is serious stage setting, because you are probably you're definitely the first, and you may be the only guest I'll ever have who collected a paycheck as Fantine in Les Mis. So I would love for you to tell us a little bit more about how you got this start, because I'm assuming they did not find you on LinkedIn.
Oh, my goodness. So I have been singing on stage. Well, I've been singing since I could make noise. I've been singing on stage since I was four. That was the first solo I did in my church. I grew up singing with my family. I knew, I think, in high school that musical theater was calling me. I have a BFA in singing and dancing and acting. Like, it's ridiculous. I'm a total theater nerd, and I love to perform. Like, using my voice brings me so much joy. Even now, as I've stepped out of the, let's call it the full-time pursuit of this, I jokingly refer to myself as a semi-recovering professional actor, because occasionally I fall off the wagon and do an off-Broadway show like I did in 2018 while also running my company. But it all comes back to the joy of using the voice. Like, I was the girl who sang. That was my thing. It was what I was known for. Being a people-pleasing eldest child type A perfectionist, recovering perfectionist, you know, that comes with its own stuff wrapped in it, but it still does bring me enormous joy to use my voice in the world and to help other people use their voices.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm so happy you brought up that you're recovering perfectionist, because we have that in common as well. Because, and I guess I should say, like, I'm not even sure if I've recovered. Like, I am still, like, really working on it. I'm a work in progress recovering perfectionist. But
absolutely.
When I was on your website prepping for this conversation,
I was very excited to see that you share language about how a lot of your coaching work is helping clients when they're trying to become, you know, better, more proficient public speakers, that you help them release perfectionism to give a present performance instead of what you call a boring, quote, perfect performance. Because you know, as an actor, that there's no such thing as a perfect performance. So walk us through this idea.
Sometimes I explain this as you can't be the director and the actor at the same time.
Ooh, I love it.
The inner perfectionist for me so often in my performing career showed up as the tiny voice in my head saying, you know, do it this way. This is when you should do the big arms, or like, you know, this is where you're going to crescendo this note. And look, see, they like it. Do you think that they like it? Make them like it. You know what I mean? And it becomes increasingly, I think, loud and desperate as you fall into people pleasing. I'm still in it. I still go to acting class a couple of times a month because it's such good practice for me. And I've been working with the same acting coach for a lot of years now. And she's like this tiny white-haired lady with these bright blue eyes, very bird-like. And she sees just right through my BS. Like, she can tell when my inner director is activated, as opposed to when I am fully present in the story that I'm telling and I'm living it and breathing it. And this is one of the deep, profound gifts of theater training, is that you get to step into someone else's shoes and walk around and explore and take actions that you'd never take in real life. And, you know, I mean, not many people, as far as I know, are walking around singing their lives like we do in musical theater, but we get to explore size and extremity in a way that most people never get to explore. So there's that aspect of it. But knowing that live performance cannot be recreated. You can't do something one way, one day in rehearsal and go, oh, yes, I totally want to do that exact thing again. Because the next day you might try to do that exact thing and it's going to fall totally flat, or it's going to feel different. And you could take that as a sign of failure, or you could realize that that's just the nature of the beast. So for me, learning how to turn off that inner director, or at least, you know, send her out of the room for a while, like go take a break in the lobby. I will bring you to the rehearsal process at some point, but I do not need you with me on stage. I have a job to do. And we end up working a lot with our business clients about that too, because guess what? Everybody's got an inner director, an inner critic, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, we have all of them. It's a very crowded, we all have very crowded heads. You know,
Oh, Lord, yes.
Because we have like inner critics, we've got inner coaches, and we've got inner directors. and I totally get that, because I feel like I've had all of those. And So how do you harness somebody's inner coach, you know, to really, or inner sort of authentic, you know, actor, you know, to when you're working with a client who wants to take a stage or who wants to be better at public speaking, because maybe they're simply giving a toast at somebody's wedding that's really important to them, and they really want to convey like all their love and excitement and share like hilarious, fabulous stories and really knock it out of the park, but they're afraid, you know, because as you know, Casey, a lot of people are very, very fearful of public speaking.
Yes. And we could spend the rest of our time together on this very juicy question. I want to keep it tight. I'm going to practice what I preach here and give you three ideas here.
So yes.
Idea number one, fear, nerves, stress, et cetera, around expressing yourself in front of other people is the most natural thing in the world. It has to do with how our nervous systems see the risk of falling on your face, of saying something people don't like, of being ostracized by your tribe, right? That activates us. It is so natural, so we got to de-shame it. That's step number one. De-shame it. It's natural. Nerves are natural. It is not a sign from the universe that you're never going to be good at this.
Yeah, no, it's smart, because, you know, some people might think like, I need to feel comfortable and confident to be an amazing public speaker. And,
exactly.
You know, and just recognizing that even very, very practiced public speakers are still often nervous when they got on stage is going to make you feel better when mm-hmm. you have your own bout of nerves before you open your mouth.
In fact, our friend Kelly Hoey, who, oh my gosh, we haven't had her on the show. You should definitely have her on the show. Kelly Hoey's fierce. She said to us on our podcast that the day that she stops being at least just a little nervous before she takes the stage is the day she knows she needs to quit, because it's the day that she knows that she doesn't care anymore. You're nervous because you care. And yes, that is a good thing.
That's great.
So, number two.
Yes, number two. Hit us up.
It's not the only thing that's happening in the story right now. The nerves don't have to be the main event. They can ride along with you, and you can concentrate on them as an energy source and then channel that into what you're actually there to do. The big transition that we have to make expressing ourselves in the world is a shift from how am I doing to what am I doing and why am I doing it? Like, the clarity of the what it is you're there to do and the why you're there to do it is the thing that will overcome that inner critic, because it gives your very busy brain something to focus on. Our brains are dying to focus on something. If we don't give them something to focus on, they're going to focus on, oh my gosh, how am I doing? Do they like me? Is this going well? I hate this. I'm terrible at this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I love that you brought this up, Casey, because I've actually worked with a speech coach. I've worked with several speech coaches, but one that I absolutely adored and I continue to work with because she was so smart, always said to me before, when I was freaking out, because I was always freaking out before I was about to do something really big or major, she would say, just remember that you're there to be of service. Like, yeah, you are there. And it took so much pressure off me, because I was feeling like I had to be amazing or I had to be funny. And what I had to do was be of service to my audience. And it really mm-hmm. made me relax, because I think that women particularly are good at being of service. We are helpful.
Absolutely.
We want to, like, share ourselves and, like, ease the burden of the person that we're working with. And when I put the audience as center and not me, like, when I cared more about their needs than mine, it made it so much easier for me to go in there. And I repeated it like a mantra, like, I'm just here to serve. I'm just here to serve. I'm just here to serve. And it worked every time. We are heading into a quick break, Casey, but when we come back, we're going to talk about tip number three.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ever notice that how you feel affects your food choices, and that what you eat affects how you feel throughout the day? Well, researchers noticed it too, and now there's cutting-edge science about how food affects our emotional well-being. I'm food and science journalist Mary Beth Albright, and in my weekly podcast, Eat, You'll Feel Better, I look at practical, realistic ways to put the science of eating for emotional well-being into action. And this is important, without lapsing into negative diet culture messages that can really ruin anyone's emotional well-being. We talk about things like how the food in your gut sends messages directly to your brain. And we also celebrate something that I personally find often missing from food health news, and that's leaning into pleasure. Because food is delicious, and it's not just about what we eat. Emotional well-being is also about how we eat. So join me every week on Eat, You'll Feel Better, where we use science to improve mood through food.
Casey, we're back from the break. We talked about tips one and two, which I really loved. You know, nerves are natural. And two, like, nerves are not the center of the stage. You know, the audiences and what you're communicating and why you're there is. What is tip number three?
Tip number three is, we have to learn how to rehearse, and rehearsal being about, not about, again, creating adherence to a perfect idea of how this is supposed to go, but rehearsal as play, rehearsal as figuring out all of the different tools that you have in your toolbox to accomplish this moment. And then here's the real tip that's inside of this. We have to learn how to move from prep brain to performance brain. So prep brain is that rehearsal brain. That's where we you know, we problem solve ahead of time. You know, if you're giving, say, a pitch at work, you're pitching your idea at work or something, maybe you do want to think ahead of time about what are the possible objections that they might have in the meeting and how might I respond to those objections. You're going to think about your given circumstances, the who, what, when, where, and why of your scene, and you're going to get creative with those. You're going to rehearse your content, of course. But then when you get in the room, you have to let all of that go and move to performance brain. Because if you stay in prep brain, then anything that happens that deviates from your perfect plan becomes a problem instead of just a thing that happened. Because Right. Guess what? Other people don't know their lines. Yes. You know, we're all in a play all the time, but like you might think you have an idea of how this is supposed to go. Other people don't know their lines. And you can let that deeply frustrate you and make you angry, or you can respond to the beautiful, messy humanity that we're all a part of and get to activate your creativity and your problem-solving skills in the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. That was another conversation that I had with my speech coach, you know, because every once in a while I'd be, you know, doing a rehearsal with her and then I would forget something. And she would say, Katie, no one in the room knows what you're going to be saying.
Yep.
So it's okay. Just figure out what you're going to say next. It doesn't have to be like it was yesterday. Now, this probably doesn't apply if you're on the stage on Broadway and people are like, wait a minute. Like, we want Little Orphan Annie to be doing like whatever. Fantine does something specific and we're expecting that. So that's like a high level of stress. But for most of us who are listening to this, you know, podcast, many of us are not delivering TEDx's, but we do want to communicate for impact. So I think recognizing that things don't always go according to plan is okay because other people don't know what the plan is. You can kind of, you know, improvise as you go along.
I have a story about that, actually. So I was on tour with Les Mis for 18 months, 21 months for the show, totally. And I was most of the time in the ensemble. And I understudied Fantine, got to play her a bunch of times, which was such a gift. It's such a fun role. The first time that I ever got to open the show in a new city and reviewers were out in the audience, which was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a review. This is huge. So this is something that folks who are not theater people might not know. We wear microphones, of course. There are these, you know, little tiny microphones that live on our foreheads. And they're wired microphones because wireless microphones are not good enough yet for Broadway purposes. And so you have to wear mic packs underneath your costumes. Well, because of the corset that I was wearing as Fantine, the mic pack had to strap around my thigh, and that was underneath more layers of costumes. So they're very hard to get to. And I was wearing two microphones, in fact, because principals on Broadway wear two microphones in case one of them goes out. So we get to the factory fight where the factory girl, who was the part that I was normally playing, beats the crap out of Fantine basically and outs her big secret that she's got a bastard child that she's been sending money to everybody, and Fantine gets fired. During that fight scene, the Velcro holding my microphone onto my thigh undid itself and my microphones proceeded to sort of fall down on the inside of my 18th century bloomers and swing around in between my legs. So I had to sing I Dreamed a Dream because I don't exit the stage. I sang I Dreamed a Dream with these mic packs, like literally swinging between my thighs, hoping to God that they weren't going to unplug themselves or like pull out from under my wig and slide down and crash on the stage. Incredibly distracting. Well, the thing about Fantine's experience in Act One of Les Mis, as you may remember if you've seen the show, she really doesn't leave the stage until she dies. So, like, I went off stage very briefly, basically to get rid of something and grab a shawl, but like I had like 10 seconds off stage, so I couldn't fix it then. So then the next offstage thing, well, there's the wig change on stage, which thank God my microphones stayed on my head. I think it was really my corset that was keeping them on my body because it snaked underneath my corset. So then I went offstage to take the dress off because, you know, Fantine is a fallen woman, right? She comes back on stage. These stupid mic packs are still swinging between my legs. throughout the entire very dramatic scene of like Fantine getting beat up by the man who's wanting to have sex with her and then getting arrested and everything. And I talk about the inner director in your head and interfering with your idea of the perfect performance, because like, here's my big chance to get reviewed.
Oh my gosh, this is hysterical. but you survived. And that I think is actually another secret to presenting and public speaking effectively, is like you do go through some speed bumps and you learn that you can, you know, you can be on stage with the mic packs in your bloomers, you know, and it can be less than perfect. And the next time you get out there, guess what? Those mic packs are like double Velcroed on, and you're gonna be a little bit better. And I've had that experience myself. I started on smaller stages. I've had some times where I'm like, you know, it was just okay. And you get better the more you do it. So speaking
of... The happy ending to that story is that I did get a couple of great reviews. So that's good.
That is very happy. I know. People are like, this woman knocked it out of the park. She had this unusual bloomer situation and still she triumphed. Oh my God, I love it. I know, the way out is through, and you did it. But so this is actually maybe a really good time to talk about when things sort of go sideways and sort of what is a, you know, there's no perfect performance, but I think a lot of people, myself included at one point, felt like when you look at public speakers, there's like a certain way of doing it. Like there's like a style of being a public speaker. And if you don't have that, you're not really it. And I think a lot of people, myself included, wonder about things like sounding human. You know, do we have to make sure we never say like or You know, what is your take on that?
Well, hopefully everyone listening to this podcast has heard me say and like.
I have a like problem. I say like a lot.
We have a very deeply held belief at Vital Voice Training that ums and uhs and likes and you knows are not, in fact, the death of your gravitas. Like... No, and neither is Vocal Fry, and neither is Upspeak. I mean, we started our company in 2014 at the height of the great moral panic over Vocal Fry, and everyone was talking about how annoying and unserious women's voices were. And we were very angry at that conversation and how that conversation was happening and the advice that women were getting. And all that advice basically boiled down to, you know, maybe, ladies, if you learn how to do your most credible imitation of a middle-aged white man, maybe people will take you seriously. And it was like, we don't want to teach people how to, like, put on their serious voice so people will take them seriously. We want to expand the idea of what the world sees and hears as leadership, as charisma, as confidence, all those big words, right? And even, dare I say, as authenticity. You brought up the word authenticity. It's such a buzzword.
It is a buzzword. And by the way, like at its root, at its core, it's a fantastic word, right? We all want to be authentic. Yeah. But it's such a buzzy, buzzy word that we really, you know, we sort of reject it now. But I think it's, for me, it's like less that, you know, maybe we can replace authenticity with just being human. You know, because some of the most engaging speakers that I've had the pleasure of being in front of, you know, either on a stage or I see them on TED Talks or in Zooms, are people that open their mouths and they share themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're sharing like either a vulnerability or they're presenting as human or they're, you know, swearing, they're slightly off kilter. They're saying ums and likes, and yet they're connecting because you so deeply feel what they're saying, and they're really bringing their whole human to their conversation. To me, that's so important. What's your take on nonverbal communications? Because we receive somebody who's presenting an idea or sharing a story or giving a speech beyond simply the, you know, the auditory and the words. What role should we, how should we think about nonverbal communications when we're thinking about presenting?
This is such a good question, particularly now, you know, as we step into this unknown future where, you know, the robots are taking over a lot of things. You know, we thought the robots were going to be built to do the things that we didn't want to do. It's a little discouraging that now the robots are coming for the things that we do actually like.
Right. They're making art. They're writing creative copy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're writing songs.
But you know what the robots can't do? They can't feel. And I mean literally and figuratively. They don't have a body that experiences the world. And this is me swinging back to nonverbal communication. Our bodies and our emotions that are housed inside those bodies and those brains can feel really messy and really inconvenient to us. I mean, this brings it all the way back to the conversation about nerves, right? If you're somebody who experiences, you know, flushing or sweating or shaking or feeling like everyone can tell that you're nervous because of your body, we often see that manifest in tension patterns, right? That like thing where your elbows get glued to your sides and you get like Tyrannosaurus Rex arms on stage. But here's the thing, your body, and especially now, is an asset, not a liability. Your body is for you to sense the world and respond to the world, and your emotions are part of that sensor. When we learn to see our bodies as an asset and not a liability, even in all of their moments of being very inconvenient to us, then we can actually bring them on stage with us. I mean, everybody wants to ask, you know, what do I do with my hands on stage?
What do we do with our hands on stage, Casey?
Well, first of all, you reject the idea that there are appropriate hand gestures like steeple fingers and like being very symmetrical and like whatever. I don't know. That stuff is lame. You know how to talk with your hands. I'm saying this to every single person who is listening to this podcast. You know how you talk with your hands when you're comfortable, when you're with your people, when you are feeling, as you just said, 100% human. When we sort of start to check those impulses and try to direct those impulses, that's when things get awkward. When you are concentrating on, again, what you're doing and why you're doing it, the hand gestures will follow. You just have to invite your body onto that stage with you and let it enjoy the ride.
Yes. I think that's so, it's so tricky, but when you're excited and enjoying the opportunity to present or share, it really makes such a difference. I also think that there's a practice plays an incredible role in this too. And I know that Vital Voice Training really rejects the notion that public speaking can be taught through like a 1-2-3 step approach. But you know, one of the steps that's really worked for me is that I have practiced, and I often practice by myself, which sounds very weird. I'll just the act of saying something out loud.
And this is
important, even if you're never going to take a stage or never, you know, you're never going to be the one to do the wedding toast because you just really don't want to do this. We all have to have uncomfortable conversations. We all have to like ask for a raise. We all have to like explain to our spouse or partner that they're like really pissing us off. You know, we have to ask for things, you know, which can feel uncomfortable. And if you have practiced having those words come out of your mouth by yourself, it makes it so much easier to have them come out of your mouth when you're saying it to the audience that you care about. Mm-hmm. And I've even gone as far to particularly when I'm presenting or if I'm leading workshops, I will video myself with my smartphone, which feels so weird and uncomfortable. And, you know, I'll do it like over and over and over again until finally it's not weird and uncomfortable. And then by the time I'm ready to walk out in front of the room or walk out onto the stage, you know, I feel like the materials are kind of, you know, they're embedded in my brain, and they're able to come out more easily. What's a tactical tip that you might offer to somebody who's listening right now, who's thinking, you know, my tactical tip would also be to hit Casey up for coaching because she does this virtually. But what's something that you might share with our listeners?
Ooh, okay. So Katie, I'm going to tell you something. I don't think videoing yourself is helping you. And okay. I want to tell you why, because this is really important.
Tell me. Yeah.
A lot of people have been told by coaches or get this idea that, you know, practicing in a mirror or videoing yourself and watching it back is a way to rehearse. It's a good way to rehearse, right? Because then you can see what you're doing and you can make adjustments. What that is doing, unfortunately, is creating a closed feedback loop. Okay. It's now just you and your talk and you and yourself. And again, that causes us to go in that place of how am I doing? It's not terrible. I'm not saying that you're like ruining yourself by doing that.
Good.
I think there are better, I think there are better ways to do it. And what I would suggest is using your imagination, first of all, and imagining an audience. I would also suggest that when you rehearse something, don't rehearse it the same way several times in a row. Here's where dramatic imagination can make a huge difference for us. And we just wrote about this week in our newsletter. Playing with opposites is a really great tool. So let's say that you are doing a really high stakes presentation at work and to a boardroom full of, I don't know, old white dudes. What if instead of rehearsing that it like you're doing it for that boardroom of old white dudes over and over and over again, what if you rehearse it like you're Tony Robbins on the stage of a 1,000-person conference, and then you rehearse it like you're speaking to a kindergarten class, and then you rehearse it like you're like announcing a prize fight or something. There are so many different ways.
Oh my God, I am cracking up. I'm like literally picturing me talking about LinkedIn like a prize fighter.
It's so much because, again, this is where we activate our fun instincts and our creative instincts. And we remind ourselves that there is not one right way to say this and not one right hand gesture or one right blocking move or whatever, particularly when it comes to stressful and emotional conversations. I think
I love this idea, Casey. I'm definitely going to try this. Here's something else. I want to like fact check this with you. So this same coach who by the way, I loved, and this did, you know, it served me well, and it made me be a little bit better. But I'm going to try this sort of imagination for different kinds of audiences, because I can see how that's so much value. But one other thing that she suggested, which I do use, and I want to hear your thinking on it, is she said, imagine that you're talking to a particular person. And mm-hmm. I've used this tool for me really effectively. Like often when I'm nervous, if I'm maybe recording a podcast where I've never met the guest and I'm feeling a bit anxious, or even if I'm walking into a room, I imagine that I'm explaining the information, I'm giving it to my friend Brooke. And I'm imagining it's Brooke because she's an incredible listener. She's very curious. So she wants to hear new things and be introduced to new ideas. And she's very empathetic. And she is somebody who is always curious about hearing from other people. And when I bring that spirit to like my audience, I'm like, of course they want to hear from me. They're Brooke. You know, Brooke's a good listener.
That is a gorgeous tool. I love that tool.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yes.
Because okay, I trust your opinion and I want to hear.
And on this note, I think especially when you're walking into a difficult scenario, again, whether that's a conversation with your partner about how they need to step it up around the house.
Yes, exactly.
Or a pitch meeting or a TED Talk or whatever it is that you want to do. When you are entering a space where you have to communicate in a way that stresses you out, we call this your imaginary entourage.
I love it.
If you've ever seen the music video Cream by Prince.
I'm like,
in fact,
I'm casting my mind back. I'm like,
I mean,
brain
it's
fog.
Worth a YouTube search. It's worth a YouTube search because this tiny, tiny man, he was like 5'2 or something, enters this music video with this entourage of gorgeous women behind him. Like he's like 10 feet tall. It's
okay.
Incredible.
This is coming back to me now. It's coming back
it's
to me.
So freaking fabulous. So imagine walking into a room with your invisible entourage behind you. And that entourage includes every person who loves and admires you, every person who's ever had your back, every person who thinks that what you're doing is really special and important, every person who you love is there. You carry them with you. You carry their energy with you in the room and they're there to cheer you on. Oh my gosh, like that way of walking in the room is so much better than walking in the room going, oh God, please let them like me and take me seriously.
I'm smiling ear to ear right now because I love this notion. And when you first said invisible entourage, I like picture myself walking in a room with like a marching band behind me with like feather caps and cymbals and, you know, clanging gongs and stuff. But now I'm like, I love this idea of being surrounded and supported by all the people that cheer me on in my regular life. And I'm going to use that also. Casey, we're kind of
I want the marching band too.
We all want a marching band. We're nearing the end of our time, but I do want to explore something before we head into our speed round. Actually, maybe two things. So Let's talk about how to present with impact when it's virtual, because, you know, the bad news is Zoom is a big part of our lives these days. I've had to do, you know, during the pandemic, a lot of my workshops that I used to lead in person, classes that I used to teach in person, moved online. We interact with, you know, family meetings. You know, I've attended Zoom funerals. There's a lot that's happening. Our lives are somewhat hybrid these days. And so is there something that we need to be thinking about when we're presenting virtually that we that might be different from when we're in real life?
Because we don't share an atmosphere with our audience, literally, right? Like, you don't know if they're cold. You don't know if there's loud noises around them or they're distracted. It's time to give yourself abundant grace and stay in the mode of curiosity about your audience and not judgment. And here's why. Because when we get nervous, when we're feeling stressed about anything, human beings start to read neutral faces and neutral body language and neutral tone of voice as negative. Mm. It's a protective thing, right? Like, we're protecting ourselves. Makes sense that our brains would do that, but it's kind of crappy when you're, you know, in a Zoom meeting and you notice that your boss is giving you resting bitch face and you're like, oh God, they don't like me. This is going so poorly, right? Well, first of all, not everybody knows that they have resting bitch face. And especially when they're in their office doing their fifth Zoom meeting of the day or whatever, right? When we can make a generous assumption about our audience, it can help keep us in that state of flow where we're actually reaching out and we're staying curious and we're staying present as opposed to judging them or ourselves.
Such great advice, because when you are presenting live, you get laughs, you feel the energy from the audience, you see people kind of looking up and being alert, and that does not translate on Zoom. So that's such a terrific piece of advice. Give your audience the benefit of the doubt. Assume they're interested in you. Number two, what is a public speaking myth that currently exists that you would like to bust? What's the biggest thing that gets in the way of people being successful because they're hanging on to this outdated notion of what it means to be a good public speaker?
Oh, there's so many. The main one is that just the idea that public speaking is only for certain kinds of people, right? Only for confident people, or only for cool people, or only for people with amazing qualifications, or only for people who have super interesting stories. And I don't have a super interesting story. No, communication is for everyone. And particularly when it comes to speaking about yourself and your own experiences, I have yet to meet a person, a client, or a person in the world who doesn't have something deeply interesting to share.
Love this.
Some story, some aspect of themselves, some bit of knowledge that they have that no one else in the world has. I want to democratize public speaking. I want more voices, and I want people to know that just because this scares you doesn't mean it's not for you.
I love that. I said at the top of the show that public speaking is for life. And I'm going to say now at the close of the show, public speaking is for everyone. Casey, this was fabulous. We're heading into our speed round. This is 1-to-2-word answers. Let's do this. This person is a masterclass in public speaking. Watch her or him for inspiration.
Ooh, I'm going to say Uzo Aduba.
Is she the actress? What does she talk about?
I'm just thinking of the speech that she gives where she's talking about her name being Uzo Amaka and her asking her mom as a young girl if she could be called Zoe instead because no one could pronounce her name, and her Nigerian mother being like, if they can learn to pronounce Tchaikovsky and Dostoevsky, they can learn to pronounce Uzo Amaka. And I was like, yes, so good. Worth looking up.
Fabulous. I will put that into the show notes. Okay, nervous before a public speaking gig. Think about this pre-speech ritual to calm your nerves.
Dance party.
Nice.
Get those nerves out.
Yeah, shake, 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 right? Get all that nervous energy released. All right, switching gears here. Favorite role you've played on stage?
Oh, Joe March and Little Women.
Ugh, nice. Biggest pinch me moment as a performer?
Performing on the Oscars.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Where can we learn more about Broadway Inspirational Voices and see your singing in action?
Ooh, go to my website, CaseyAaronClark.com. You'll find links to BIV, links to other singing videos and audio, as well as how to work with me via Vital Voice Training. And of course, you can also go to Vital Voice Training's website, www.vitalvoicetraining.com.
I love it. Okay, finally, your one-word answer to complete the sentence, as I age, I feel...
bigger.
Casey, this was so much fun. I love seeing you singing. I love hearing your thoughts on public speaking. I so enjoy this conversation, and I so appreciate your being here with me today.
Thank you so much, Katie. This was a blast.
This wraps A Certain Age, a show for women who are aging without apology. Before we say goodbye, a huge thank you to everyone who has taken time to write an Apple Podcast review. I see them, and I so appreciate you. Creating this podcast is an absolute blast, but it's a ton of work, and I love seeing reviews that hype the show up. You are the best, truly. Special thanks to Michael Mancini, who composed and produced our theme music. See you next time, and until then, age boldly, beauties.